Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
September 29, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, and this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know this? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. Anyway, it is Thursday, and yes, indeed, if you're hearing us on that day, just after 8 p.m. Eastern, here on the East Coast of what they used to call America, we are live, but otherwise, you're hearing us further on down the stream and all that good stuff. So, what do I have in store for you tonight? Well, we do have 2 hours this time, and the reason is I had to get Captain Trips in the second hour. And I had to do it because it's time, number one. Number two, he's just in the midst of the big hurricane that everybody's talking about. So we'll get an update on what's actually happened there in that place. Some people are calling it DeSantistan, Florida, that is. Anyway, I really wish that the Trump 2024 campaign would stop trying to get me to buy Trump DeSantis 2024 flags. But anyway, who knows? Maybe we'll get into that in the second hour and some other stuff. I have a philosophical question, a large one, that I've been pondering all week. But Mike Swanson is with us in the first hour to man behind WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. Also the author of The War State and Why the Vietnam War, the first in a series of three about that particular conflict, which will feature information and maybe some stuff you won't get anywhere else regarding that conflict, because Mike puts things together in a very unique way and is an excellent author who I highly recommend. And not just because he is a supporter of the show. I supported his work long before he was on the show. But anyway, well, not long before, but before. At any rate, glad to have Mike Swanson with me, and also, just before I get into the conversation with him, like to remind you that we do have the new stickers available, and if anybody makes a contribution to the network this week, I'll send you a handful of these suckers, and you can share them with friends, okay? So the O'Chelly Syndicate sticker, which looks a lot like some of my social media stuff, reminiscent of the Godfather logo, okay, just to go along with the joke, and who knows, maybe I'll have to create another graphic for the King Chuck thing that has started now with Jack's listeners. I don't know. I know why they're doing it, because my name is Charles, you know, and we have a King Charles in England, and now for some reason they're calling me King Chuck. I don't know. I don't get it, but anyway, maybe you do. Enough of all that. Make a contribution to the network, though, in the next few days, and I'll definitely get those out to you. But right now, I can't even afford to buy the stamps to mail them out. Requests that I've taken so far, I've mailed them out, but I have no more stamps even. I'm broke. It's the end of the month. It sucks. Anyways, Mike Swanson, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good. This hurricane.
Yeah.
Is it called? It's called Ian, right?
Yeah, it's
or
Ian.
Ian.
Ian. Yeah. Hmm.
Well, I'm not keeping up with things as well. It's not really hitting Florida. I mean, I'm looking at the hurricane cone. I mean, what I'm looking at, it's going at South Carolina, isn't it?
No, it hit Florida for all week. We were hearing about brace yourselves.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be brutal.
But now it's in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, I guess it's gone into the ocean now. I mean, like I said, I stopped watching because I was watching the European model and the American model. And quite frankly, a lot of my news feeds were taken up with all kinds of Hurricane Ian news.
That's why I'm getting confused, because when I first heard of this, the path of it looked like it might go up to Georgia.
Yeah, it is going to.
And now it's completely different than what I saw a couple of days ago. That's why I'm, surprised by it.
Well,
I mean,
we're not going to take the direct brunt of it, which they thought we would initially, but we are going to take some heavy rains and things like this. And of course, nature does what it does, regardless of their trajectories and projections. But it does appear as though I dodged the bullet, even though I turned around and got, you know, extra water for the house and things like that. Because I had a feeling that if we had gone down power wise, we wouldn't have had it supplied. So I've got my water filter set up and, I don't know, 20 extra gallons of water that I wouldn't even normally carry in the house, just to be sure that we had clean water.
You
gotta
be careful in these things. A couple of years ago, there was a hurricane that went up through North Carolina, and where I live, they were saying it would come to where I live and cause flooding and all this stuff. You know, I'm 2 hours inland from the coast.
Right.
But, you know, the system would come where I live and do all this flooding, and it didn't.
Right.
And then like 2 weeks later, they're talking about, oh, there's another hurricane. What happened was because they were saying it's going to come and come and come, people panicked, and they went to the grocery stores, and people do, but they really were panicking, and I never really saw where I live.
Right.
People panic over a hurricane like that. And then, so it didn't happen. And then within 2 or 3 weeks, there's another hurricane that was, and I'm in Virginia in the right on the North Carolina border, like in the middle of that, of the state. And, there's one on the panhandle of Florida that was coming. And I just, me and everyone I know, no one paid attention to it. And what did it do? Well, it came and it ended up, coming inland, and it went, literally the damn thing was over my house, the center of it. And it rained, over a foot. And I've never seen rain that hard, in an hour. So it flooded my basement, but that's no big deal. But yeah, two people died trying to drive around, and it's just, you never know, you know?
Well, right. And that's the thing about this is that, sometimes there are these big panics and media attention is paid to a storm that's coming to an area, and then it fizzles. And then people don't take it seriously the next time, and something big does happen. So, what happened for me basically is that, where I am, again, I'm in the middle of the state too. And in the middle of the state, we have flooding issues when these storms come through or they run up and down the coast, mostly. But sometimes the storms turn inward and we also get tornadoes. It's a weird thing that happens. And, I was looking at a system. I even offered to, we're going to find out in the second hour. I offered Captain Trips a shelter for his family if necessary, because, they were talking about, 60 miles wide, a serious path of destruction. And I don't know what it looks like in the aftermath. Definitely it hit Florida. It hit part of Cuba. And now it's on its way up the coast. So I think tomorrow we're going to see whatever we're going to see from it here in Georgia. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it'll get up to you too and still be something, or maybe it'll be nothing by the time it gets there. It's one of these things that we watch during hurricane season, right? Being on the East Coast. It just is. So anyway, not exactly the thing I wanted to talk to you about, but it is dominating my news feeds. So, what can I say?
Well, it's a weather event. They happen.
Right.
People are having to leave, it's not like what's happening in Ukraine or something. It's not this disaster of that scale. And that's what we're talking about last week.
Right. Right.
There's all so many things happening around the world. But one thing struck me that we didn't talk about during that discussion is that all the Russians that have left Russia,
right?
They say around 300,000 people left after his announcement, and most of them are in countries neighboring Russia. And
I want to ask you about this. Hold on a second. The massive exodus from Russia that's supposedly happening because of the mobilization, right? This is a mainstream news item for sure, but I don't know. Did you get any feedback regarding our discussion about the nuclear postures and policies of both the Russian Federation and the United States? Because I did, and it wasn't pleasant.
What were people saying?
They were very angry at me for not understanding what the policy of Russia is. And the idea that they have done this saber rattling several times, and that I'm pretty much an idiot for even suggesting that we don't know exactly what they're going to do. This is all coming about during the very same week that we've had these referendums, which, you know, they keep stressing on the mainstream news that they are all sham referendums. I'm not saying I disagree with them, but I am saying that, you know, this is what happens in a totalitarian state. It's not like they don't hold elections. They still do. They're just really legitimately fixed. I mean, well beyond the chicanery that goes on here even. In some instances, they're very much fixed. I don't know what the circumstances are because I haven't gotten a lot of good objective reporting out of it. But I will say that it looks to me like they're legitimately going to try and carve up part of Ukraine, and Ukraine is going to react to it one way or another. They're either going to accept it or not. That is happening. And also we have this explosion at the Nord Stream pipeline, which has caused a bit of a shakeup when it comes to Europe and energy, right? So all of this is happening, and meanwhile, yes, there is still a battlefield raging hot in Ukraine, where they're reporting to us that, you know, Russians are becoming demoralized and not pleased with the outcomes or results that are being seen on the battlefield, etc. But I got kind of harangued harshly about my poor analysis, actually. I didn't think it was very poor, you know.
No, what are they saying the nuclear posture of Russia is?
Well, that I should know better, that they're absolutely not going to utilize these weapons, that they never would, that, that this is
seriously, what is their argument? What do they say they're trying to do? Or?
Past behaviors, that Putin has made suggestions that the rest of the world didn't pay as much attention to earlier regarding the very same thing, that he has made allusions in the past that, listen, we still have nuclear weapons, okay, that he's done this in order to leverage things, that he's done it for nothing more than, gains in the gaming of other countries that are very much fearful, and that this is just the gaming of the NATO alliance and other countries that are vulnerable at this time. So that I'm just pretty much an idiot, that I don't understand that that's all it is, that there is no realistic threat of any kind, that he's going to escalate, and that what he's going to do is go all in on carving off these pieces of Ukraine.
Well, I'll say this about that.
Well, say whatever you want on here, Mike. I agree with you or not, go.
Well, first of all, I don't think these people are right what they're telling you. But I did hear that argument earlier this week. And first of all, you can go and see what Putin said, and I think these people are right that it's unlikely he's going to use nuclear weapons.
Well, see, I thought I said that during that discussion, that it's unlikely.
And I thought about it more, actually. Yeah. You know, another reason why it's unlikely, I don't want to harp on this too much, but to get more specific about Russia, but mm-hmm. one problem with nuclear weapons is that it's very difficult to use them effectively. So, as you know, I spent a lot of time, or I have, reading about nuclear weapons in the United States, our strategies for using them, and during the Cold War. And I could tell you, during the Cold War, the Russians really didn't have a strategy that was laid out. It's more like, we got these weapons and we're going to use them if we're attacked. We're in the United States, we're running all these brand strategies, and they have all these mathematicians and on and on and on scenarios. They really didn't do that. They just, we got the weapons and, you know, we'll use them if we have to. But in the, one of the real interesting turning points about it in the United States, which I got in the Vietnam book, is that when the Dien Bien Phu crisis was happening, I'll tell two of these stories and jump back to Russia.
Sure.
But when the Dien Bien Phu crisis was happening, The French were under siege, and the head of the Air Force, the head of the Navy, he wanted, he had a program called Operation Vulture that he wanted to do. And, you know, we're told, well, he wanted to bomb, give air support to the French. Well, he was willing to use a nuclear weapon to do that. And there was a discussion with Eisenhower and Nixon and different members of the cabinet of whether to use nuclear weapons. And, so the Navy Admiral Radford, I'm speaking of, he was the chairman. He was for it. The head of the Air Force was for it, but the head of the Army at the time, and his name escapes me, but he was against it. And the argument he made was that even if we use three of them, he claimed it would, they thought it might take three just to stop the siege. And he argued that even if we did that, we would, it wouldn't win, make a battlefield victory, that we wouldn't enable the French to win, even if you did that. And Eisenhower, you know, agreed with that. So the point is, the situation now with Russia, I would say, is very similar, that even if they used a nuclear weapon, I'm skeptical that that would give them a battlefield victory. So the other ways to use it, which from my understanding, well, I'll tell you what these people are telling you first. So I was listening to a podcast someone else was doing with someone named General or Colonel McGregor, who's a Fox, apparently some sort of Fox News expert who's been, blaming the war on NATO. And I do think the United States and NATO, you know, I don't think there's any innocent parties in this whole affair, but, with this guy was making the argument, these people told you, and I wouldn't be shocked if this is the guy that created it, and this is where it's all coming from, because he's been on multiple podcasts.
Right.
And what he was saying was that, well, Putin actually didn't say anything last week, just like what you said, and it's all the same you said before, and he's only saying these things because of the nuclear threat that we pose to him.
Right.
And he made one comment in which he did say something to the effect that we're threat, the NATO and the United States is threatening him with nuclear attack. Now, that's been called propaganda when it's referred to the United States. And and what they'll say is he doesn't cite anything, you know, and nowhere that I know of has Biden, or anyone in the, you know, threatened a nuclear attack, anytime recently on Russia.
Right. As we covered last week.
Just propaganda nonsense. Yeah.
Well, as we covered last week, Biden would come up to it and say, if they do this, if they do that, if Russia is aggressive, blah, blah, blah. He kept saying what? There will be consequences. He didn't describe them. He didn't say it would be an escalation of the type of munitions used. He didn't say that there would be the possibility of, you know, weapons of mass destruction, right, being used here. He didn't say any of that. He didn't put it up front. And my point is, and my point was last week, that there is a big difference also between the public face of what the policy is and what it is they're actually enacting behind the scenes. So we need to keep that in mind, and I think we need to look at that also from the point of view, the vantage point, right, of what it is the Russians are doing versus what it is Putin is making statements about. I don't think that's unreasonable at all to say that there is a difference between those two things. I mean, maybe I'm just crazy, Mike. I don't know.
Well, honestly, I've told this off air a few times with you, but
okay.
2017, several years ago, so, you know, a couple years ago, before any of this business really got going, I was curious and I did a study of different anti-war groups, looking at tax records. I was curious how much money do they get? And then I looked at some of these, I'll just call them war lobbies, and it's staggering, the discrepancy. The Ron Paul Institute, for instance, I don't know about now, but a couple years ago, it was surviving on a couple $100,000. Mm-hmm. And that's what most of these anti-war groups, alternative media groups that have nonprofit foundations where you can look, that's the kind of money budgets they get. It's not very much. And these just war lobby groups get millions, and there's so many of them you never even heard of them. Like, to give an example, when someone sent me this book, like a religious end of the world book, saying there's going to be a war in the Middle East and Israel is, you know, at the center of it, this guy has some foundation, and I looked his thing up, and he was getting like $5 million a year. And it's just like one little dude. The defense lobby, foreign lobbies, Israel, and on and on, they pump so much money, and it's unbelievable. And they're not the only ones. So there was a lady that was big in the alternative media who has since retired, but she, you know who I'm talking about. Pierce Redmond would know. Mm-hmm. You know, she looks like she gets money from Turkey. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just so seems undeniable what she was. So I say these things to suggest that, you know, the rise of RT, a couple years ago, I have no doubt that there was Russian money pumped into different alternative media outlets and so forth.
Well, right, and I know for sure that they have given jobs to people that are kind of alt media people over the years. They've given them outlets, they've given them platforms. I've had these discussions with people. I'm not going to say who tell me, you know, they're going to pay me to write for Sputnik, you know, and I go, well, I don't understand why you think that's such a great thing, like. You've said over the years you don't want to be part of any sort of state-run media, right? Not in your own language, not in this language, not in Europe, and so on and so forth. And yet they embraced going with the Russian money. They took Russian money. I mean, I've actually had these personal conversations with a couple of other broadcasters, let's call them. I don't get it. I don't get it. I see that, you know, look. There are people that have accepted bankrolling from anywhere. I'll tell you a weird thing too. You know that Australian company that I had a job with for a whole week.
Yeah.
Okay, and they fired me over my Ukraine views. Right. I mean, that was essentially it. It was sort of like fall in line. You know, Ukrainians are all Nazis, or you're fired. And it was a significant chunk of change that they were going to pay me annually, okay, or weekly, but the annual money was good. It's so funny because independently, one of their hosts and their program director have now approached me and didn't know that management has decided I'm on a blacklist. So one of their main show guys contacted me. I'd really like to get you on and get your analysis about this and that and the third thing. He booked me and then had to cancel me. Because management said, due to a previous relationship with this person, we don't want him on our air. And then their program director, their new program director, contacted me. And these are people that just decided, you know, that picked up on me for one reason or another on their own. I didn't solicit this. Came to me and said, you know, we're going to start doing these like 10-minute expert drop-ins, and you're clearly an expert on international intelligence issues, and an expert on the deeper end of the political pool. So we would love to be able to get you to come in and, you know, at certain times with breaking news, give your analysis about stuff for 10, 15-minute segments on multiple shows. So I wrote back to her, and I said, you know, listen, I'll be more than happy, and no hard feelings from me, but your owners over there have blacklisted me. No host is allowed to book me, and your network is not allowed to put me on anymore, regardless of what your purpose is. You can check with them, and if they, you know, have changed their mind, I'm good with it. I have no hard feelings with them, but apparently I am a really, you know, high voltage as far as they're concerned. Now, I didn't talk about this yet on the air, but this has happened now. And apparently there's other Australians who could have offered me paying jobs, and when they did and they went to go process, there was a company wanted me to write for them. There's a new a text news website that is going to have, like, audio versions of all the articles or whatever. And I'm not going to reveal the name because of confidentiality and all of what they wanted me to do. But fact is, they got told you're working with TNT. You can't have this guy on. I'm now blacklisted in Australia. So I don't know what's going on, Mike. But it's weird. And there's foreign money that I could have taken. But see, I was willing to take it if I was independent and I wasn't being dictated to. And certain people that have worked for the Russian outlets have found out the same thing, you know. If you step across the line when it comes to Russia, obviously the state-run Russian media doesn't want to pay you and will cancel you and blacklist you, okay? American media is kind of like that, but they don't have usually an organized blacklist against you. Unless you have publicly done something that they don't want to be attached to, and then you have the cancel culture coming in and hitting you. But otherwise, I'm just telling you from a personal point of view, I don't understand getting in bed with these propagandists who are state controlled by any state. It doesn't matter what the state is. It's not like I'm anti-Russian. You know, as a matter of fact, I see some sympathy. Oh, here we go. I know specifically, look, Amir, I love you, man, but very specifically, you know, there has been propaganda to turn Russia into a boogeyman in the United States. That has been intentionally done, regardless of how justified it is or is. And I'm willing to speak to that and speak to the fact that Vladimir Putin's not a good guy. He's an oligarch, and he has oligarchs behind him, and he's a criminal, just like so many others. But, you know, I'm not allowed to say that, and I have Trump derangement syndrome and blah, 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 whatever. I don't know, Mike. I don't know what to say anymore about this whole, you know, weird milieu that has occurred here regarding media and people that are supposed to be, you know, more on the renegade side of things than taking some other state's money outside of the one that is directly connected to their national concern.
One thing about you, J.P. Satilli used to say, I don't remember exactly how he put it, but something like two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
Something like that. And problem is, you know, that thinking in complexity is becoming more and more difficult for people. And I think the internet makes it that way because it's a really great propaganda mechanism, and it does encourage people who create content to be propagandistic and just present one side, because that's what most people want. That's what you get rewarded for by the algorithm. So It's very easy then for there to be two dominant messages out there. The mainstream media message that really does and has demonized Putin for years.
Right.
And then the opposite, where you just flip it around and just be an apologist for them.
Right.
One or the other. And really, you know, if you look at history, I would, you know, I would argue that NATO and the expansion of NATO, you know, what caused this war? That's, you know, if there's an original cause, that's it.
Well, it's got to be
because it started to, you know, when Clinton was president.
And that's the thing. Just because NATO's encroachment upon the Russian Federation is baked into the cake that becomes what it is we're looking at today doesn't mean that that's all there is to the story.
Right.
And also, just because somebody's a victim, you know what? And he might be indeed a victim of NATO on some levels, the Russian Federation, the Russian people may indeed be victims of NATO on some levels. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are always innocent victims. Anyway, I'm going to take a break here. Mike Swanson, we're talking about Russia. We're talking about a few things I didn't expect, and who knows where we'll go next. I might even want to discuss something about the economy before I run out of time with Mike, but stick around. Keep listening to the Ocelli Effect, and you'll find out at exactly the same time as I do where this conversation is going. We'll be right back.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Revelation through conversation.
I want them to appreciate the incredible job we're doing. We are doing a job the likes of which has never been done before. You're going to have mental depression for people. You're going to have large numbers of suicides. Take a look at what happens in a really horrible recession or worse. So you're going to have tremendous suicides, but you know what you're going to have more than anything else? Drug addiction. You will see drugs being used like nobody's ever used them before, and people are going to be dying all over the place from drug addiction. I want them to appreciate the incredible job we're doing. We are doing a job the likes of which has never been done before. I want them to appreciate the incredible job we're doing. We are doing a job the likes of which has never been done before. You're going to have mental depression for people. You're going to have large numbers of suicides. Take a look at what happens in a really horrible recession or worse. So you're going to have tremendous suicides, but you know what you're going to have more than anything else? Drug addiction. You will see drugs being used like nobody's ever used them before.
In denial. Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into the Ocelli Effect.
Ocelli.com.
Second segment of the Ocelli Effect here on a Thursday continues now at Ocelli.com. But of course, you could be hearing us some other time, some other place, and we do appreciate you. No matter how it is you are joining us, welcome. Anyway, it is a weird day this Thursday, and weather's been strange, that's for sure. We started talking about hurricanes and then got into other disasters like what is happening in Ukraine. And I don't think anybody should be arguing with me that we don't have an unrelenting disaster, as that has now gone more than 6 months. The Russian Federation conquering at least part of something that is no bigger than the state of Texas. And frankly, looks to me like they're going to try and legitimize the carving off of a couple of regions. And they've gone forward with that, and we barely scratched that and talked about how people are covering it and all that so far. But Mike Swanson is with me, the guy behind WallStreetWindow.com, author, analyst. Really, I want to call you a historian. Technically, you're not, but you are a historian. So, you know, you don't have that... I know you have a degree, but you're not like technically one of those like fully qualified, like we should call you a historian. We should just make you the head of a historical society though. Cause I think then they have to call you a historian, Mike. I don't know. Anyways, also, who knows? Maybe you'll, want to get involved in the JFK Lancer thing this year. We'll see about that. I still haven't fully decided what to do there. Cause I was invited. I think you were too, right?
Yeah. I got an email about it.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes. Anyways, so back to it, Mike. I don't know if you want to keep talking Russia or if you want to talk about the price of prices.
You keep talking about Russia. About it is we're all in the United States, so we're far from the situation. So are these experts
right.
that we see or hear. And it's a war too. So yeah, the fog of war is real. It's hard to know, even if you're in the country, what's going on. Intelligence that the different governments get is cloudy. And it's just difficult for the leaders to not make mistakes or miscalculate. Mm-hmm. And to give you an idea, I think what one has to do is listen to different experts
right.
who might have different opinions and then try to figure out what makes sense.
Well, the other thing to capture, well, wait a second, because the other thing to capture here is direct reporting from what's happening. You know, if we can get some firsthand reports from people that are involved in the military campaigns, from people that are involved directly on the ground in Ukraine, okay, not, you know, somebody they sent to Poland. Remember at the beginning of the conflict, they even sent Don Lemon to Poland, right? And other places just outside of the country to be like, well, we're looking at it from over here. We need to get some firsthand information, I think. That would be the best thing to do before you start making these, I mean, I don't mean you, Mike, but before people start making these judgment calls about this. That's important. By the way, you just reminded me of something. I was thinking about doing a discussion on the fog of war, you know, the documentary. Do you have a copy of that?
Yeah, I got it. I
say you and I coordinate one of these Thursdays where we just, sit and discuss that.
Okay.
That might be a good one for Larry Hancock to return on, which, you know, I'm hoping he's able to do that very soon. And, you know, I said initially maybe in September, but perhaps he'll return in October. And when he does, I'm thinking that would be a great, you know, way to bring him back in on the discussions here on the show is to talk about the fog of war, which, was this documentary, his Errol Morris documentary. And how would you describe it? I mean, it is, you know, clearly about Vietnam, but, really quickly, how would you describe it if somebody's going, the fog of war? I never heard of that. I know the term, but I never heard of the movie. What would you tell somebody if they said that to you?
It's about Robert McNamara and then the Vietnam War.
Yeah, of course. And McNamara being the Secretary of Defense, you know, under JFK and also under LBJ, right, clearly played a vital role in what became the Vietnam conflict. Of course, he did not prosecute it after LBJ left office. Nixon came in with his own people and they went about it their own way. But nevertheless, McNamara is a key figure in that historical event. And it's a fascinating film that has information in it that, you know, a lot of people have parroted it afterwards and pointed to it. But I think it is an interesting study. And when we put that in perspective and why it is that people will frequently use the term the fog of war, I think that'll be an interesting discussion. So let's get back to this, though. As you were saying, since the conflict is still ongoing,
I'll give you two examples. People I've listened to in the past couple of days, your friend Amir, he got me onto something.
Okay.
And there's a Victor Krulak Center that's part of the Marine Corps.
Right.
That's been doing videos about the Ukraine war. It's like a Marine Corps college. And they do one about once a week, mm-hmm. and you could find it on YouTube. And I've listened to two of them. And the first one was discussing, after Putin's announcement last week about the mobilization. And they made the point in this video that supposedly 300,000 people have fled Russia.
Right.
And before that, people think it's been 500,000. So you're talking 800,000 people. And they made the simple point that, you know, these Russians are going into other countries. Right. And, you know, how long are they going to be in these other countries? So this is a migration that, you know, they think they're going to these countries for like almost like a vacation. And what if they're not going to be welcome back to Russia?
Well, see, that's a weird thing because
all kinds of weird, you know, socially and economically. And then, you know, it's a brain drain out of Russia.
Well, let me ask you a weird question about this, because I clearly saw, just like I'm sure you did, the report about a lot of Russian nationals going to Finland, right? Because of the visa situation made it easy for them to go into Finland. And it's really interesting, but same time, here's the thing, Mike, and I don't mean to be, you know, Mr. Is Everything Fake. You know me. I'm not that guy. But my big question here is that some Western propaganda that is taking something and maybe exaggerating? You know, the idea that some guys are going to flee. Look, a war comes and you know that you are subject to being drafted. You know, just like in America, some people are going to run to Canada. Okay. It's going to happen. And how long they're going to stay, how significant that flight is, how many people, what really the amount is. I'm not saying that I honestly trust the people that are reporting this. Is it true or not? Is my first question, right? Do you think that that's crazy? And do you think that it's possible that it is just an attempt by Western media and Western strategists to sort of demoralize the Russian support for the war, which has been there, and to try and amplify opposition to undermine, again, just popular support? You think that's a possibility that that's like fabricated in part? Not in whole, I don't think, but in part, at least, to just achieve goals like that. You think that that's a possibility, Mike?
I would say it's probably more of a true story than a false story, but,
okay.
You know, they're going to take advantage of it. That's what I would say.
Well, no, they're certainly going to take advantage of it, and they could be seeking to amplify it or to magnify it, right? That's a possibility as well. I'm just saying, look, I try to be objective about this stuff, and we all know that at various times during, you know, military conflicts, that different national interests, and our country is certainly not immune to it, but different national interests will try and present a spin on anything that's happening that could affect the support at home, well, the willingness
to
people
sign
up. Yeah.
The important meaning for it, though, and I think it's obvious, you know, that any mobilization like this is going to put pressure on Russians.
Right.
I mean, it's just going to tax society. That's what war does, just as the Vietnam War did here. Any war will do it. And this is something Putin did not want to do, but he did it. Because he had to.
Mm-hmm.
The war went on, has gone on more than he originally expected. I think everyone will agree on that. So it doesn't matter if it's 50,000 people or 300,000 people. It's taxing their society.
Well, right.
Eternally. I mean, it's just.
Well, and the thing is this, right? The people that have chosen to be Russian mouthpieces have effectively said, look, this is exactly what was meant to happen. They're not actually losing any ground or losing anything because any of these, if they wanted to crush Ukraine, they could have just crushed Ukraine. They simply wanted to carve off these pieces because, well, here we go. They needed to defend the Russian loyalists that were within Ukraine from the Nazis. Da, 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 da. This is what the mouthpieces are doing, right?
Yeah, the thing about, here's a thing though, that Krulak Center thing. The second video, one of the commentators made this claim, mm-hmm. which I don't believe.
Okay.
And I don't even know if he believed it.
Okay.
But they're discussing the war and it being worse for Russia. And they were saying, well, hypothetically, you know, how many people can they really draft? Well, he was pointing out a real problem. And that is, say they draft, you know, 300,000 people. Mm-hmm. It takes time to train them. Like, you just can't throw someone immediately to the front, without some sort of training if they're going to fight effectively. And one of the guys made the comment, well, they're talking as if the Russians are just getting completely wiped out and they're just going to throw more and more and more people out, you know, to the front, and they're like, and the guy says, well, maybe that's a strategy because they can just, it doesn't matter if they're trained or not, if they just throw people out there that surrender, it'll slow down the Ukrainians. Well, that's, so to me, you know, that's kind of over, you know, hyperbolic or way over optimistic of what Ukraine.
Well, it seems like it's poor brinkmanship. Okay. It's poor brinksmanship to do that with the military. But we also know that during, say, the Vietnam War, the U.S. did shorten the training process at a certain point in time.
At one point, McNamara literally
shortened the training process.
Well, not only shortened the training process, but he had a special program to, I'm just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
He had a special program for people semi-retarded to go to Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
No, I know. But that's what I'm saying is that see, that's the thing, is when there is a real world pressure put on a military force that was not prepared to accept the, you know, numerous casualties, the losses, ineligible people because they've now been wounded, etc., in a conflict, it's not beyond the realm of possibilities that any one of these governments will turn around and say, well, just shorten the training process, get these people out there faster. We need infantrymen with rifles. They do that. That happens. Okay. I know it's not supposed to happen. It's supposed to be the best trained military, but what you're doing is confuse, you know.
One thing about listening to commentators too. So another commentator I listened to who I trust. And this is an important thing.
Well, also, really quickly, a point is made in my chat room that the reservists that were called up, okay, according to the stories coming out of Russia, did already have some pre-existing training. So it's not like it's people that have never held a gun before. But what I am saying is that on occasion, governments will do that as well. I don't think that's what they're doing. I think that they're calling up exactly like my chatter is saying. Reservists that do have some level of military training.
Sure.
Who are at least semi-prepared and can be quick time readied for battlefield action, right? So it's not as though we're talking about fresh recruits that have no experience just being thrown onto the battlefield. You know, here's a gun, go, right? Mike?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you see stuff saying they've been, you know, letting prisoners go, you know, people that really don't have military training, too.
Again, not outside of the realm of possibilities for a government to do stuff like that, but I don't think that's the majority of what's happening. And again, some of this may be propaganda-based. Like you said, you don't necessarily believe the storyline that says, you know, look, they're just immediately going to feed people in there like cannon fodder.
Well, the flip side of this, I bring this up as a story to point out a storyline I don't believe. That's why I'm bringing it up. One.
Okay.
So someone who I listen to that I do trust and believe is Colonel Larry Wilkerson. And the reason why, and I think this is a solution to how do you handle all this information on the internet, no matter what the topic.
Okay.
So the thing about him, I've met him, you know, once, talked to him for 2 hours, like with three other people. And, but before I met him, I had listened to him many times on the internet, you know, since the Iraq War or since he retired. And he was, he's been on lots of alternative media over the years. But the thing is, by having listened to him so many times over years, I have been able to form a pretty idea of where he's coming from.
Right.
And how accurate or how useful the things he says is, you know, if he makes a prediction or prognostication, how does it jive with what ends up happening?
Right.
So I've listened because of that. I feel like I have a baseline of being, and I feel like I can trust him. And I think that's a thing about the internet. I had someone I know, he does a financial podcast and he's been doing it since 1999.
Okay.
And he interviews like 30 guests a month.
Okay.
And they're been the same guests over the years. So I found listening to his thing really useful because I could listen to a few people and hear how their opinions are changing in regards to the stock market.
Right.
As opposed to just turning on the television set or.
And random new guy shows up.
These random talking heads.
Well, see, that's why it's great what you and I do, because over the years people can hear you and I discussing things, and there is a marker, a benchmark previously, right? So we talk about history, we talk about current events, and they can actually, you know, see how, indeed, now, both of our views have changed a little bit over the past few years.
Yeah, so like the Krulak people, I see two videos of them. Mm-hmm. The Wilkerson guy, you know, I find him to be reasonable, and he's not, you know, and usually saying something very interesting to me. So he made this point in a video I saw of him this week that, look, the idea that Ukraine is going to defeat Russia is actually, he argues, absurd. Mm-hmm. And the reason is real simple. I'm reading a book right now about World War II. Well, Hitler invaded Russia. Napoleon invaded Russia. They couldn't beat him because, look, I'm looking it up right now. According to Wikipedia, Ukraine's got an army of 250,000 people. Mm-hmm. That's not counting Navy forces, but this is, you know, the army. One estimate, another estimate says 280,000 people. Well, the Russian army is over 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to invade Russia. They're not going to defeat Russia in that sense, and I don't know if they can really defeat them in these two provinces.
Well, see, now, they're not going to invade Russia in that sense, but here's the thing. If there's a declaration because of these referendums that these places in Ukraine are now basically Russian territory, and the Ukrainians don't, you know, agree, and they attempt to take it back, then they have literally invaded that. At least I believe this is what part of the argument will be. Now we can take active measures because these things belong to us now, you know, and that's the key.
I think you're right. I think that's the whole purpose of what Putin did. I mean, if you step back, the nuclear threat gets all the attention, but
right.
He's setting up how he wants to get out of it, right. How he wants the war to end. He wants to take these two regions.
Right. And
that's what he wants. And he's saying, if I don't get it, I may use nuclear weapons. Now, he's not likely to use them unless he truly is, you know, at a point where they're beaten out of those two regions.
Right.
Which is unlikely to happen.
But this is why the whole thing that happened in Crimea is so important, because they took that, and now that's ours now. And now when there is an invasion or an attempt to take it back or an attempt to rejoin it to Ukraine, it's a different issue as far as the way they're arguing it. Now, I'm not saying that the court of public opinion on the worldwide stage is going to agree with Vladimir Putin here, but I am saying that I think that is the entire point in... Does it mean that that's the end of it, really, and that's where it'll stop? I don't think so. Incrementally, I think it'll justify other actions. Now, I'm not saying that this guy, you know, I'm not doing the whole Saddam Hussein is just like Hitler. He's going to keep taking stuff and, you know, that nonsense that people push. I don't think it's necessarily that, but I think we got to take it very seriously that that is what the end game is. Whether that was the initial intent or not, you know, I'll leave it for people to decide, but that is where we're heading. So.
Well, I mean, when the war started, I mean, he moved towards the capital of Ukraine.
Right.
And then couldn't take it. And then they had to pull back. I mean, that whole thing took over a month.
But the argument there is, again, by people who are very supportive of Putin, is that realistically, come on, Mike, they could have taken it if they wanted to. So they didn't. That was restraint, right? And the whole point was just to seize these two areas, the Donbass region.
That's nonsense.
Well, I think so too, but.
I mean, it looks pretty obvious that we need to go back and read them word by word, but he was basically aiming to overthrow the Ukraine government, you know, hoping it would topple. And it didn't, and now the goals of the war have been pulled back to let's have these two provinces, and really, that could be what ends up happening, you know, when it's over with, because it can't go on forever.
Well, nothing can go on forever, but plenty of conflicts go on way too long. And as it does, people are going to suffer, and it's just that simple. And then when you throw in this very interesting interplay about what's going to happen with Europe and energy and the Nord Stream pipeline and so on and so forth, there is a lot in play here. And, you know, again, it's unfortunate and it's horrible, but there is going to be a lot of suffering, I think. And all for what? To gain these two regions? I mean, is that justifiable? Well, if you're denazifying, you know, blah, blah. I can't wrap my mind around the support of making people suffer who, you know, didn't necessarily invite a conflict, you know. But this is the game. Anyway, Mike, we're almost out of time here with you, so I want to give you a chance to say whatever it is you want before you're on your way out the door. But again, go over to WallStreetWindow.com, be in the know, and I highly advise that if you haven't read them already, The War State by Mike Swanson, as well as Why the Vietnam War, both of them highly recommend pieces of reading by a very interesting historical historical analyst, I did it again. analyst who I believe we should somehow get named to the head of a historical society so we can just call him historian Mike Swanson. Anyway, Mike, your final thoughts for this particular Thursday, and also, are you going to be back with me next week?
Yeah, I'll be here next week.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. But go ahead. I turn the floor over to you, sir.
Well, I don't really have much more to add to.
You don't have a close. It's okay. It's saying. Fine. Look, there's never a script, guys. Just so you know, there's never a script. We openly have these discussions. We don't pre-plan them at all. And I really appreciate your indulgence with me, Mike, because, you know, I'm more than happy to be, you know, not the smartest guy in the room, and it's just you and me in the room. So appreciate it, man. And thanks. Is there anything that we should know about coming out of WallStreetWindow.com? Although you guys should sign up for the daily, at least, you know, during the week, newsletters that come out with a collection of articles, very interesting stuff. I always learn something from the news releases from Mike Swanson in the morning. But anything we should be on the lookout for at WallStreetWindow.com?
Well, I mean, I'm working on a big article about stuff happening locally. That's what's taking my time up now.
Ah. Well, so. are you going to piss off? Are you going to piss off some more local politicians, Mike, or what?
Yeah, something of that sort.
So. Nice. Listen, if you're pissing people off, you're probably doing something right. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson, thanks so much for joining me, sir. All right. Anyway, we'll see Mike Swanson next week, but in the next hour, we'll be talking to Captain Trips, and we're going to get deeply philosophical about the general situation on the planet and why it is going the way it's going. So in a way, we're going to have to cover politics. We're going to have to cover the hurricane. We're going to have to cover a lot of stuff with Captain Trips, and I'm sure you want to hear it. So stick around. The Ocelli Effect continues after this.
Support Chuck Ocelli at Ocelli.com.
There's no money in it, so
yeah, that is
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And you know, some people would say that look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model too. And look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain. Okay, because people want to support you. They love you to death, but honestly.
So if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show. And I want you to do this too, because, you know, the Ocelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, you know, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com. Ocelli.com. Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia. By author Mike Swanson. With new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia. 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War by author Mike Swanson.
jockchelly.com.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli.
Segment number three of the Thursday Ocelli Effect is happening now. So welcome to it, whether you are hearing us live on the stream as we broadcast, or if you're catching us further on down via your final slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher du jour, welcome to it. So we are live, though, as of the 29th day of September, 2022. Allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. So here it is. And Captain Trips has joined me. You know, I didn't do a few shows this week for various reasons. Want to remind everybody that, again, if you make a contribution over the next couple of days, I'll make sure to stuff an envelope full of a bunch of the Ocelli Effect new syndicate stickers and send them out to you along with a thank you directly from me if you provide me with an address. Because right now I think I've got about 33 cents to my name. And no, I didn't pick that number specifically. That's just my PayPal balance. And I don't have a bank account. That's what I live on. So, yeah, that's where I'm at the end of the month until certain things come in and get paid. So, yeah, if you even throw a dollar in, I can at least buy the stamps to send you your pictures, stickers, excuse me. And they are that little graphic that is reminiscent of the Godfather. And all that. So there you go. That's what we're doing right now. Anyway, support the network, please. There's my plea. There it is. And I'm done. Captain Trips, we hadn't heard from you in a bit. And then we heard from you, what, the other night, last week, I think it was, on the call-in show. And you just dodged a hurricane-sized bullet living in...
yes, we did.
DeSantistan, yes, we did. DeSantistan, you call it, but
DeSantistan, yes.
Yeah, Florida, for those of you.
And you know, I gotta say, I so far it seems like DeSantis is doing a great job handling it. I gotta say, I was listening to, he was giving a press conference this evening, and I thought, you know, I'll hand it to him. He's been very, very professional as far as his, you know, dealings now with Biden after, you know, just a week and a half ago, those two, you know, sparring over that little, field trip to Martha's Vineyard. Mm-hmm. But you know, and 99% of the people that were asking questions, it was all about the storm. You know, it was all about the storm response. This one twit who I had to have been a plant was literally trying to was trying to get him to badmouth Biden. It was tasteless. But and I'm thinking, God, do these people, is there anything they won't pull politics into?
Well, here's the thing. Simultaneous with this storm and what's going on in Florida and the Martha's Vineyard thing and all that, I don't know if you're on any official mailing list when it comes to these campaigns or these politicians, but I am. And I will tell you that Trump 2024, the official account that handles all that and does all his merchandising, is really pushing the Trump DeSantis 2024 flags.
I believe it.
Yeah, and have been lately. They had stickers, I think. They had bumper stickers. And sold out of those, allegedly. And now
they probably would.
Yeah, but now they're pushing flags, right? So, you know, you're supposed to put these on your truck or your lawn or whatever. The yard signs are not out yet, but then again, it's only 2022, so, you know, why
sell? Yeah, DeSantis is in the middle of running for his reelection, but it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I'm gonna completely restrain myself and not give a prediction because I have a feeling whichever prediction I give, it's gonna be wrong as far as whether DeSantis is gonna end up, trying to run in 24, running with Trump in 24, or simply waiting until 28.
Yeah.
I truly don't.
No, that's cool. And besides, I don't need any more controversies. I've already, or controversies, as they would say in another part of the world. I don't need any more of those because I've already got a bet with Jimmy James over Stacey Abrams running in Georgia. Which is only a little more than a month away now, by the way, when we're going to start getting the results on that selection. But, you know, and I'm telling you right now, I will totally flip my entire viewpoint about the stolen elections, and I will allow anybody on this show wants to talk about even Trump having an election stolen from him if Stacey Abrams is somehow selected governor in Georgia. I will believe that there is absolutely no way that that could have been done without a massive theft. So,
I would tend to agree with you.
Yeah, so it's impossible. I mean, I don't care. She's a liberal darling. They made her president of the world on the new Star Trek. You heard about that, right?
No.
Oh, well, Star Trek Discovery, they actually hired, it was like, here's the president of Earth. Right? Because we have a unified, you know, one world government in Star Trek.
Right.
So the president of Earth shows up and beams in to a situation and it's Stacey Abrams. I mean, the character's not Stacey Abrams, but it's Stacey Abrams playing the president of Earth. And, you know, nobody bought it for like a minute when that first came out. The right wingers were going crazy like, look, the liberals are already telling you they're gonna, Abrams is not going to survive. I mean, she's probably going to get herself a cabinet position somewhere, you know, like a like Buttigieg did with, you know, with the walking dead Biden there. But I don't foresee her being anything other than that. And she is certainly not going to be the governor of Georgia. I don't care how they try to steal it. It ain't happening.
I don't think so. And yeah, I think I think her. Whatever chance she had to rise to the top of that party or you know that movement, I think has passed. But no, I agree. I can certainly see her as some type of cabinet level position.
Yeah, and of course, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm gonna slightly change subjects because
sure,
I'm you know understandably I think. There's been nothing else going on in the world for me for the last probably 5 days. Nothing outside of the state of Florida.
Okay.
just with the storm, it's been absolute madness here. Anyway, I've only read a few little pieces about this pipeline incident, we'll call it.
Right.
What's your take on that? With this explosion on this Nord Stream 2?
Well, my take on it is that there's a variety of possibilities in play here, and I'm going to surprise a couple of people when I say that it is a viable possibility that you have a false flag situation here where we're going to see this blame ascribed to somebody, and it may have indeed been somebody bombing their own asset. I do think that that is a distinct possibility, and I don't think it's going to come to the forefront right away. Exactly what the solution is.
I haven't given it too much thought, nor have I read a whole lot about it to really have a strong opinion. I can't see the benefit in the Russians bombing this pipeline. Well, I don't see where they benefit.
Well, I can because their mouthpieces will continue to claim victimhood. For Vladimir Putin and his ilk, you know, poor Putin has to defend the Russian Empire because if he doesn't, all of us, you know, boogeymen from the West are going to come in and, you know, choke him with our NATO ropes. This is what we do. So, you know, that is what's going to happen. I really do think that, and I think victimhood is assured here, no matter who the blame is placed upon, for public consumption. I think it's actually irrelevant. The blame is going to be placed on the wrong parties to begin with this. And it's very suspect to have happened at exactly this time. It's going to add pressure to Europe and it's going to split, people's concerns there regarding, whether they want to face, you know, dealing without that energy source. See, that's another thing, is that this is going to assure and eschew more loyalty for those that are in business with Russia. So that's a guarantee. It's brought up in my chat room, by the way. I love this, too. I didn't get to it yet, but why not? Let's go. Biden literally today thanked a politician who has been dead a little while for getting together.
Was that today yet?
One of his get-togethers.
I thought that...
Yeah. Might have been a day ago.
Yeah, I saw that. He did. Yeah. He thanked the politician that died.
Well, he was like looking for her. I think it was a her, and he was looking for her. I mean, you know, excuse me if I got the pronoun wrong. Who knows? But thing is, he was like, yeah, well, so where is this person who I really don't remember hearing from before, but apparently who had passed away, like, not a few days ago or something, but, like, a while ago.
Is it, you know, who I wondered, and I just heard the clip of this, you know, this, that it happened.
Yeah.
I was actually about to give him somewhat of a pass on this one, because if you remember, it can't be more than maybe a month, 2 months at the most, there was a congresswoman, I think it was an Indiana congresswoman, I really don't even remember if it was a Republican or a Democrat, died in a car accident with two of her staffers.
Yeah.
Was in a pretty bad car accident, and I think one person survived, the congresswoman didn't.
Right.
So I was actually gonna give Grandpa Joe there a pass on that one.
Well, yeah.
Maybe he was looking for her.
There you go. You never know, but...
And I don't give him any passes, so...
Right, no, I appreciate it, I understand it, it's, you know, look, it's a possibility. Anybody could get confused, but it's just amazing to me that somebody who should have enough staff around him to keep him well informed about at least who's dead and who isn't, would allow him to make that comment. I mean, is he going off script? And that's what the problem is. When he goes off script, he doesn't actually know anything. Can he read his script? That's another question. I mean, you know, see, Barack Obama could read his script, and Trump doesn't know what a script is, so we haven't been used to...
And Clinton could read, and really, quite frankly, I'm gonna say it, even W could speak better than Biden.
Yeah, of course he could, but you see, but W memorized his stuff. He didn't read either. Okay, so he was, you know... I'm telling you, you know, it's, I mean,
oh,
that's,
no, I know.
That's how you got the, you know, you fool me once.
Food on your family.
Food on your family. Fool me once. Those are clearly flubs off of his memorization. You know, it's not the script. Yeah, there you go.
The good old days of W.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's see. Oh, hey, and I do, all right. Anyways, it is just too funny, when this kind of stuff happens. But I want to take you into something in the next half hour. Now, we're not through this half hour yet, but when we do finish, I want to set something up in your mind, and it's going to be a philosophical debate. I think I have finally come up with the proper pattern that must be recognized that actually explains all of this cognitive dissonance. You know, people that, again, like I've been asking the same question since, you know, Trump became a player, on the political field nationally and is now the leader of the Republican Party effectively and all that. And I kept asking these questions like, how is it that people that would never support a rich guy who was always privileged, right? And would never support a guy who rips off his workers and stuff. How is it that they got behind him and call it a patriotic act? How is it that people that claim to be loving and wishing to be accepting of all people, you know, on the other side of the alleged equation, have become the morality police that will attack you for something you said 15 years ago because you personally don't like gays or something? How is it that they have become, you know, let's deperson people for their points of view because it mildly offends me? And let's go back in history. How did you get loving embrace turns into, no, we should crush any dissent? How is it that this keeps happening when people, you know, claim to be of one persuasion and they don't ascribe to those actions? How did we get there? You know, I want all natural stuff, but only if it's been approved by the FDA. I want, you know, I don't want mandates of any kind, but you better take your shot. You know, I don't want people to be told how to live, but you better live this way and allow everybody else to throw things in your face that you disagree with. I like, you know, free speech is just fine so long as you don't offend our safe spaces. And God help you if, you know, the political outrage and we're being targeted worse than anybody else because we're conservatives and oh my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're not, but that's okay. There's
it's
a war
all over
on,
the map.
There's a war on Christmas too, still raging. You know, I'm just saying. Dude,
forgot about that. Good there, Lord.
Well, I'm
oh,
just saying,
man. I wish that was my biggest problem anymore.
Well, all this bizarre outrage comes into play, right? And we care mm-hmm. about, you know, the amount of, you know, the illegal immigrants are coming into the country. They're destroying the country. But it's okay if you send them to a liberal city. That's fine. Let them deal with it because it's a sanctuary city, even though that's got nothing to do with what it is these people think it is. It's a sanctuary city in that, do you want, you know, undocumented people to refuse to interact with the authorities? You know, you people that support the police and all that good stuff? You want them to not associate with the authorities, report a crime, whether it's occurred to them or they were a witness or anything else, because they don't want to be deported? Or would you like them to have enough sanctuary that they're not automatically reported to, you know, ICE?
Yeah.
I mean, no, don't do that because
I don't have a good answer for any of it.
Because it's a liberal city. Choke on it, libs. But that doesn't really deter. See, but that's the thing. They're still in America. You're worried about them overrunning America, but it's okay if we can make them overrun a liberal city. You know,
I have a little bit of a different take on the whole Martha's Vineyard thing. And I'm gonna start off by saying it was absolutely 110% political on the part of DeSantis. Yeah. No question asked.
Okay.
But I think the reason it was done was for the exact response that happened when they got to Martha's Vineyard, to be able to spin that, which was how quickly they were then ushered off of Martha's Vineyard. To make it, to just purely paint the picture that kind of, it was kind of the same thing with what Abbott was doing with busing people to DC and to Chicago.
Right.
But I honestly think they just want to use it to say, yeah, well, hey, we sent you, you know, we sent these people to Martha's Vineyard and you got rid of them a whole lot quicker than we did when they landed in Texas or they landed in Florida. I think that was the point. I think they knew what would happen when those people got there, that, you know, it wasn't going to take long before they were taken away from Barack Obama's front door. And I really, truly think that was the political stunt that DeSantis was pulling.
Well, of course. But the point here that I'm trying to make is that it's completely obvious that they're going to send people. What part of Martha's Vineyard do you think has housing for anybody who is either broke without a job? I mean, do you?
You're right. You're 100% right.
They don't even have housing for their underpaid, you know, servants there. They don't have, you know.
Are the servants even allowed to stay on the island? I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. Even the people that say work in a restaurant can't afford to live on Martha's Vineyard. So if they have restaurants there or whatever, the guy washing the dishes, do you think he can afford to live anywhere? I mean, seriously,
probably
they don't
the
have any.
The person that owns the restaurant can't afford to live there.
Probably not. But he might be able to afford to commute, you know, take the ferry every day or whatever. The guy washing dishes can't. So, you know, duh. And the funniest part about that is when they put together the little brochure telling them they were going to get all these wonderful government benefits, which you don't get as an undocumented immigrant, regardless of how many times you repeat it. When they put it together, they even included the wrong flag for Massachusetts. I love that.
Oh, God, I love it.
They absolutely.
What did
yeah.
you hear now? That.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. That's fun. That's funny. No, I just heard that I saw a CNN headline about how while DeSantis was busy shipping, quote, legal asylum seekers to Martha's Vineyard, his state was struggling for workers.
Well, you know, why not?
okay, let's assume that these people truly were entitled or, you know, qualified for whatever we use for asylum. Do you really think that they would have had a job at McDonald's down the street 5 minutes after they set foot in Florida?
Well, no, not 5 minutes after, no. But, you know.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. But the CNN piece was acting as if, well, you know, first of all, there's jobs down here. There's still a lot of jobs down here, but it's not like there's no work. There's no shortage down here like there was in Maryland before I left, mm-hmm. where, you know, you couldn't get a cup of coffee because there was only one person to run the whole coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm rambling at this point.
No, it's okay. But my whole overall point is, first of all, you care about the overall health of America. Shuffling these people from one place to another didn't accomplish anything except it scored political points with the liberals don't want these people around either. So mm-hmm. we're not bad. I get
that's it. That's all it was intended for.
But that's all this has been intended for, whether it was sending them to D.C. or Chicago or wherever. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. And in New York, they were happily opening arms and welcoming them, which was really funny to me because I was like, that's actually the last place, as liberal as everybody thinks New York is. I did not expect that.
Liberals in New York, there's a limousine liberals in New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of the New York liberals.
Well, right, and they don't want to know how the Korean guy is working out of the closet that's next to the bodega. You know what I'm saying? They don't want to know any of that. And it used to be Korean guys that ran all that stuff. And for a little while, there was Indian guys and different waves of immigrants of varying degrees of legality would come into New York, and that's what they would do. And they literally would set up a cot in the back. This is true. I saw this with my own eyes. Would set up a cot in the back, and the guy would live in, like, a closet and run a little store, and that's how he would work himself up. And, you know, it's just... So there's different things that go on, okay, is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And dropping these people on Martha's Vineyard, even in the case that there was, homeless people in Martha's Vineyard, which I don't think there is. But even in the case that there was, there's no place to house them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, panhandling does not work among the ultra-rich, I got to tell you.
Nope. They're the last one that's going to give you. They're the last one to give you a buck.
So, you know, come on already. I mean, let's be realistic. Did they own the libs with that one? Well, not really, but they did make the media, and they got people talking about it, and okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying I necessarily agree with it all, but here's the thing.
At this point, with a lot of this stuff, I'm truly just sitting back eating popcorn, watching them kill each other.
Well, no, that's, you know, and that's all fine and dandy, but I want to actually discuss why it is we're setting to kill each other and why it is this is happening. And it's really an oversimplified explanation, but I want to explore it with you. And I think it's informative if we actually get to this and understand, what the handles are. You know, everybody talks about steering people and everybody talks about, you know, manipulating the crowd and how it is that groupthink is established and all that stuff. But they never talk about the real core. What is the effective strategy that's being utilized that seems to keep making these patterns repeat, you know? You have, you know, even Jack was talking about the Hegelian dialectic again on his show, you know, which is, represented as, you know, problem, reaction, solution. That's not quite right, but still.
No, it's a bit more complicated. Yeah.
Yes, but that pattern is true at this point. And it is true in all things. And it doesn't matter if you're arguing about the price of something in the store, how bad the economy is, how lost is. Is it important to own the libs? Is it important to, fall in line with this or that? Okay. I think it all boils down to a universal question, and I'm going to get into it with Captain Trips in the next segment. So stick around. The Ocelli Effect will return for the final piece of the puzzle on this Thursday. Stick around. We'll be right back.
chili.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapon. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Do you remember that time when the year 2012 was going to create the apocalypse, end of the world?
Right. And I thought it would come to the end.
Did it ever end up that way?
No.
Yeah.
Like we say, the only way it will end is when he is ready for
That's
it
right.
to end. That's how it is.
So if you want the real truth about 2012, you better listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
Radio podcast. .com.
Yeah, forget it's John Cusack.
John Cusack
doesn't know what he's talking about.
Know what he's talking actually about. Correct.
But we here at the Ocelli Radio Network sure do.
Do you sure understand and understand where it's actually coming from?
Ocelli.com.
.com.
Ocelli.com.
Effect. Fourth and final segment of the Ocelli Effect for tonight, which is the 29th day of September 2022, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar. Captain Trips is with me, and now I have in my mind, anyway, the idea about the paradigm which is driving all of this, all of the conflict, all of the problems, all of the political discord and everything. And it's going to be oversimplified, so let's see if you guys think I'm just, you know, stupid and an idiot like a lot of people think I am about the question of the use of nuclear weapons, apparently, regarding Russia and all that. So let's see how stupid I can get. Captain Trips, you with me?
I'm ready.
Okay. Here's what the basic idea is, how it is that people are being steered to sometimes work directly against their own self-interest, to support people that are not there to represent them, that are clearly working against them, that are not people that they should support based on, I don't know, their entire life history. And, you know, all else,
fair enough.
You know, it's weird. Like I said, I've been, you know, really startled by the idea that there are people that believed, you know, a man is a man, and we are the type of creature that, as men, we are supposed to gather our skills and strength in order that we should defend those that are weaker. This is our responsibility as men. And yet they are full on behind and believe it is a patriotic act to back a guy who would never get his hands dirty or use his skills to defend anybody except himself, Donald Trump, of course. And also people that seem to care about others and believe in other people's freedoms, they say, believe that they are ready liberal, and yet they are ready to crush people for uttering the wrong pronoun, for not being full on in support of, you know, Caitlyn Jenner and God knows whatever else. Like, you need to be crushed because you are.
And a lot of people have been.
Okay. It's painful to me to watch people fight against the things that they claim to believe in. But I think I've actually got the reason why, finally.
Okay.
Took me a while, and it's really, really simple.
I have all ears on this one.
So here's the thing. I think it is all based on hate. And it really is based on hate. I kid you not, okay? Here's the deal. They figure out that they're going to steer people, and they realize that they have a sort of hated group, a hated something that is the other, that they've been trained to dislike and whatnot. Now, you may not be at your freest to say that any longer, that you have a hatred, an irrational hatred for someone, another group, some other people. Okay, we all know how divide and conquer works, but here's the chink in the armor, the bizarre thing that has intellectually kind of passed by people in recent years, I think. It's not just about the hate. It's about the idea that you can hate these others, you can disagree with these others. Yes, 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 but here's the problem. It's not just that they're wrong. It's not just that they're out of touch with what it is you want. It's not just that they're not with the times, that they haven't come around to modern conventions, that they haven't agreed that, transgender people are, you know, normal. They haven't agreed to that, so they're terrible. No, it's not that simple. It's not as simple as you don't believe in American values and the family unit and blah, 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 therefore you're terrible. It's not just that they're terrible. It's that they have literally adopted the idea that anything that is other than, and it doesn't matter what the political stripe is or the moral paradigm is, it has gone beyond they're wrong. It's gone beyond they disagree with you. It's gone beyond they're just bad people even. They have now transferred it into these others are literally evil. And you are obligated because of whatever is righteous. Because almost everybody that we know, and I don't know anybody who, they may not understand it this way, but they have an idea about something that is righteous for them to defend, whether it is, I defend America because America is the greatest country in the world. Okay. I defend Christians because that is the only religion that has the truth. And okay. I get it. But the acceptable thing nowadays, which did not used to be acceptable, the new wrinkle is that the others are actually evil. And being that they are evil, they are subject to treatment that is not fair, that is not equal, that literally because of your righteous indignation over whatever it is, that they are so evil that they are eligible to be treated as an evil. And what is it if you are confronted with an evil in life in any way, shape, or form? If an evil action is literally taking place, right? It's like breaking into your home. If somebody is literally aggressively breaking into your home, you can take a life because you need to defend yourself. Yep. They have turned self-defense and they have turned righteous indignation into the normal default. So, if you are against, you know, the liberals and their, you know, rotting of society and all of that, It's not that they're wrong. It's not that they have the wrong point of view. It's not even that they're bad people. It is that they are truly evil. So righteously, right, you now have a right to shoot at
them. Kill them. Mm-hmm.
You have a right to kill them. They are other than. They are not people to be convinced or transformed or argued with. They are literally like an infestation. They are, they are like cockroaches in that you don't reason with cockroaches. You don't reason with them because they are an invading ugliness that is not worthy of fair treatment, decency, the preservation of life. And that has been incrementally pushed into the mood of things where it's not necessarily declared that you have the right to kill or to take or to do whatever you want, but it has been encouraged without it being uttered. And this is why.
Well, just the fact that we, you know, I'll go back to the whole, one of the reasons I'm, you know, happily living in DeSantistan, you know, it was a direct result of that, because not only was it, you know, not okay to refuse to do what they wanted me to do, they wanted to destroy my career. Uh-huh. Because I wasn't going along with the program. They're still trying. They just can't because I'm gone.
Right. Now,
I know exactly what you mean.
Now, there's an interesting thing going on in the chat room where it's like, yes, you're right about the left, but you're not right about the right. Okay, contrary. Because here's the problem. On the right, the leftists are seen as that which is destroying society, is destroying the future, that they are truly evil. If you break it down and you get people to loosely discuss it, if you clearly embrace the right wing and believe that you have the righteous path, the opposition is worthy of terrible treatment. I hear it all the time. It's okay to, it's fine. You know, shooting Antifa people is fine. You know, shooting the guy who's got the AR-15 who's out there defending property rights. Well, that's a bad thing. See, that's because of your orientation. What you've been encouraged to do is to do battle with evil. And that's the thing. Now, on some levels, I'm not saying that it's always incorrect that some of these things are not evil. They are, but it is now permeating everything. That any sort of disagreement, any sort of other is evil now. And that is...
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, because you're leading right into, do you remember the controversy over, I mean, this was, it came right on the heels of Joe Rogan, interviewing one of the verboten, scientists. We'll just put it that way.
Okay.
I don't want to say I don't hit any of the trigger words. He talked about something called, what he was calling mass formation. The psychologist out of Denmark, I think it's Denmark, that Matthias Desmet is talking. I just read his book, and he very similar to Gustave Le Bon, and then Hannah Arendt in Origins of Totalitarianism, about how, you know, basically people go crazy and they look for, sorry for the background noise. They look for basically something to blame everything on. They need to identify the other. And it was very obvious over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do his theory any justice. It's Matthias Desmet. He's been interviewed, Chris Martinson from Peak Prosperity was where I first heard of him, but he's recently been interviewed by Del Bigtree. He's definitely making the rounds. I think he was interviewed by Alex Jones not too long ago on Jonestown.
Okay.
But basically he says, you know, as this goes on, the more irrational things become, the more they respond to it. And they, you know, get to a point of just sacrifice. They'll sacrifice their children. They'll sacrifice anything for this cause that they have now identified with.
Mm-hmm.
He attributes it a lot to society, you know, just a lot of the changes in society and people being more and more alienated and more alone, you know, despite the interconnectivity we all have.
Well, right. And that is what is allowing it to really fester. But I do believe that the key is now that, and like I said, I'm watching it in the chat room where it's like, no, it's the left that's like that. No. And I know I'm going to get emails now. Listen, Chuck, you're giving the right a break here. It doesn't matter. I cannot land in a place where people are going to go, it's okay. Because yeah. I don't think that anybody wants to recognize that we have all, and I do mean all of us, have been absolutely inundated with the idea that you are not facing people and ideas that are bad or wrong, you know, they're just incorrect or ill thought out, or they're to be argued over. We are literally in a time where the declaration about the idea, the action, the political party, whatever, the religion, it's not a matter anymore of disagreement, difference, or anything like that. It is a matter of they are truly like, you know, like they were talking about in the 70s, and I think we forgot about this. Even Generation Xers, like us, forgot that, you know, they used to talk about how America was supposed to be the great Satan. Literally, we were supposed to be the great Satan, right? Over among the Ayatollahs and all that. We're the great Satan. We're the great Satan. Well, I think people are failing to understand that when you decide that the other, that the opposition, whether it's a mild opposition or an extreme one, are to be viewed as exactly that, the highest level of that which should be opposed. If it is truly an evil, if it is truly the thing that threatens your life, now, what lengths are you willing to go to combat evil, as opposed to somebody that you might disagree with? I mean, we've all had discussions or arguments or disagreements with somebody we care about or don't. It doesn't matter, where at some point we might throw up our hands and say, you know what, we're going to agree to disagree. Anytime anybody says that anymore, first of all, they usually don't mean it. And secondly, it's not actually legitimately embraced anymore. You can't have an agreement to disagree because you are meant to fight it with an indignation that is based on righteousness. You're righteous because you have the right way. You actually have the correct thing, and the other, anything other, is not just an opposition, a disagreement. None of that counts. It's nonsense. It's actually an evil thing, and you are to confront it as an evil thing. You know, again, the oversimplifications that have come from, and now I'm going to hit both political parties and see if anybody, I'm going to get all kinds of crap for it. Don't care. Biden, with his ultra MAGA blah, 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 was pushing toward, gently, but nevertheless, still right in line with this. This 25% likely of the country that is in that ultra MAGA pocket, that is really, truly, by population, the Trump supporter, which is one out of four people. They're not just wrong. They're not just to be disagreed with. They're literally an existential threat. Now, he's saying, you know, domestic terrorism and this and that. He's making them the larger existential threat that is truly evil. On the other side, Trump did that all the time. These people are sick. These people are terrible. These people are... Anything that opposed him was beyond salvation, redemption, argument, you know, any sort of rehabilitation, discussion, all in, this is the enemy. This is the enemy.
Yep.
And not only is it an enemy because of disagreement or contest or conflict, but it is the enemy because it is literally the thing that is so threatening because it is truly evil, and you cannot reason with true evil. See, you can reason with somebody who disagrees, sees things the wrong way, so on and so forth. But if you're dealing with evil, you must dispatch of it. You must deal with it. You must be willing to give up things to put it down, to get rid of it, to cleanse a place, a person of said evil. So this is what the unspoken part of the paradigm is any longer. And there's no nuance in between. With the whole thing with Russia, which I brought up several times, and again, I find it hilarious that it's the thing that got me fired from a decent job and cost me money and has now blacklisted me and so on and so forth. The thing is, I had to accept that either, and the only reason why, you know, it was one direction for me, I had to basically go with Ukrainians are evil. They are participating in all sorts of evil, reprehensible, unredeemable things, and therefore Russia's righteous. That was the thing I had to embrace, otherwise, you're done. On the other hand, people are being told they must embrace the idea that the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin, is literally like Satan himself. And you know what? Mm-hmm. You have to virtue signal on that side of it. And there is no other option that is functional for somebody. So that's the thing. Now with this, you know, with the left-right paradigm over the past, you know, decade or so, that's what it became.
That's changed.
Barack Obama.
That whole left-right.
Well, Barack Obama.
That whole thing's changed.
Yeah, Barack Obama was not just literally somebody you disagreed with, didn't like his policies, blah, blah, blah. No, right. He had to be the Antichrist. There are people to this day that still send me the biblical signals are all there. Barack Obama's the Antichrist. Yeah. Well, you know, he hasn't continued to remain in power exactly, unless you think he's the guy who's running Biden right now and ran Trump too.
There are people that think that it is Obama that's running Biden.
Yes.
I don't think so, because quite frankly, I think Obama was run by somebody else as well. So I don't think Obama's the brains behind this. And I'm not saying he's a stupid man. I don't think he's as high up in this chain as everyone wants to give him credit for.
Exactly. Look, the guy is a good presenter, as I've said many times. He was certainly a good front man, spokesperson for those he was working for. I give it to him.
He was.
Slick One presentation. Slick presentation. And again, Trump was perfectly packaged to deal with, you're sick of that? I got something else for you. So, you know, and then Biden, you're sick of Trump? We got Biden for you. Every time. And matter of fact, even, and I point back to this, despite the fact that I am sick of Jonestown and Panic Attack Jones over there, and don't care that he's getting hammered in his lawsuits. I think he deserves it. It's not a chilling effect. Boo, 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 boo. Stop crying about it. It's Alex Jones. He's a multimillionaire, and he's a pimp for garbage on the internet. That's what he is now. Yes, he gave out some good information, but you know what? There was a certain point at which, believe me, everybody you listen to, look at, or whatever was doing another job too. They are not forever the barista at Starbucks once they get on TV, okay? Anyway, point is that in the Obama deception, when they showed KRS-One, and he said, look, here's what happened. They put a black face on the New World Order because they wanted black people to say, oh, I can identify with that. That's okay. That's what Barack Obama's, not his sole purpose, but that was what one of his main purposes was. To finally answer the, you know what, why do I feel as though I have any sort of need to give fealty to the system? I don't have a need for it because I am not represented in it. Here's your answer. Look, brown skin got into the White House. And KRS-One nailed it. I'm not saying I agree with everything KRS-One ever said, but again, not a stupid man. And that was presented in a Jonestown property. I don't agree that he was the massive socialist, but see, that was the trigger, is that socialism was Satan. So it worked, you know, to keep certain people. And like I said, to this day, I'm still getting, he's the Antichrist, he's still in power. You know, okay. You know, whatever. All right. But my point is, I think that we've come to a point at which the lost string here, the lost through line, is that we are meant to view the other as evil instead of disagreement, instead of participate in the Socratic method. It's just evil. So what is evil capable of in your mind? It doesn't matter. Don't apply it to one of these, modern things that I'm talking about. Evil will do anything to accomplish its goals. Evil doesn't care who it injures. So when you finally, even if it's not being said, when so, you know, when you're watching your Fox News, you know, Joe Biden and everybody who works with him is evil. When you're watching MSNBC, Donald Trump and everybody who's supporting him and Mitch McConnell and all them, they are evil. That is what's being pushed. And now, how do you, as a righteous and decent something, regardless of whether you actually are, how do you confront evil? How should evil be treated? Therein lies the problem, why the disconnect is as it is. So anyway, Captain Trips, I went really long-winded there, and I'm sorry, but that's...
No, you're fine.
I think the missing element here, I think that's the thing that nobody's paying attention to, is that once we get to a point where there is no nuance between you're on my side, you're part of my righteous group, or you're against us. I mean, literally, you're either with or you're either with the terrorists.
Either with us or against us.
Or you're with us. Is now not just a joke from the past, but is all there is in discourse. What do you think?
No, you're absolutely right. I tend to think this is... one of two things. I tend to think that this was done on purpose to some level, but at the same time, it just makes me wonder: are we really just witnessing not the complete collapse of Western civilization? Are we seeing such a steep decline that that you can't really argue that we're headed down that path that every civilization before ours has headed down. Because if you look around, nothing makes any sense. You have to, when you take a step back and look at everything, you want to laugh at it because it's hysterically funny because, none of the narratives make any sense. They don't go along with one another. If you bought into one of them completely, you'd go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've certainly seen that. I completely agree with you. What we're seeing is it's no longer can you just agree to disagree, or no longer can you simply dislike the political positions of candidate A or President A, or it doesn't really matter.
Or even the guy you disagree with about, what it is you should allow in your neighborhood and et cetera. It doesn't matter any longer because there is no home. There is no, somebody said there's no safe space for anybody who wants to be, anywhere other than on one of the extreme sides. They're right. So either you take an extreme position, or you have no intellectual home, you have no tribe, you have no safe space, you have no protection, you have nothing except opposition. That's why I get hit from both sides, and I'm confused about it all the time, because it's like, I'm honestly taking apart your enemies too. And they don't like it. They don't like it. It's all or nothing.
It was one of my...
Yeah. I'm sorry, Captain Trips, we're gonna close on that. All or nothing, that's all there is anymore. And I say we can do better. So let's do it. The Ocelli Effect is done. I want to remind you guys again, though, that, could use your support at Ocelli.com. I got 33 cents to my name right now. So anything will go to the care and feeding of the host, right now, and also to some bills that I have sitting there unpaid. So just letting you know, that's the case, and in the next few days, it's essential. Thank you, and I appreciate you guys, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. See you tomorrow night.